Notes from the Underground by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Chapter 10. You believe in a palace of crystal that can never be destroyed. A palace at which one will not be able to put out one's tongue or make a long nose on the sly. And perhaps that is just why I am afraid of this edifice, that it is of crystal and can never be destroyed, and that one cannot put one's tongue out at it, even on the sly. You see, if it were not a palace but a hen house, I might creep into it to avoid getting wet. And yet I would not call the hen house a palace out of gratitude for it keeping me dry. You laugh and say that in such circumstances a hen house is as good as a mansion. Yes, I answer, if one had to live simply to keep out the rain. What is to be done if I have taken it into my head that it is not the only object in life? And that if one must live, one had better live in a mansion. That is my choice, my desire. You will only eradicate it when you have changed my preference. Well, do change it. Allure me with something else. Give me another ideal. But meanwhile, I will not take a hen house for a mansion. The palace of crystal may be an idle dream. It may be that it is inconsistent with the laws of nature, and that I have invented it only through my stupidity, through the old-fashioned irrational habits of my generation. But what does it matter to me that it is inconsistent? That makes no difference, since it exists in my desires, or rather exists as long as my desire exists. Perhaps you are laughing again. Well, laugh away. I put up with any mockery rather than pretend that I am satisfied when I am hungry. I know, anyway, that I will not be put off with a compromise, with a recurring zero, simply because it is consistent with the laws of nature and actually exists. I will not accept, as the crown of my desires, a block of buildings with tenements for the poor on a lease of 1,000 years. And perhaps with a signboard of a dentist hanging out. Destroy my desires, eradicate my ideals, show me something better, and I will follow you. You will say, perhaps, that it is not worth your trouble. But in that case, I can give you the same answer. We are discussing things seriously, but if you won't deign to give me your attention, I will drop your acquaintance. I can retreat into my underground hole. But while I am alive and have desires, I would rather my hand were withered off than bring one brick to such a building. Don't remind me that I have just rejected the Palace of Crystal for the sole reason that one cannot put out one's tongue at it. I did not say because I am so fond of putting out my tongue. Perhaps the thing I resented was that of all your edifices there has not been one at which one could not put out one's tongue. On the contrary, I would let my tongue be cut off out of gratitude if things could be so arranged that I should lose all desire to put it out. It is not my fault that things cannot be so arranged, and that one must be satisfied with model flats. Then why am I made with such desires? Can I have been constructed simply in order to come to the conclusion that all the construction is a cheat? Can this be my whole purpose? I do not believe it. But do you know what? I am convinced that we underground folk ought to be kept on a curb, though we may sit 40 years underground without speaking. When we do come out in the light of day and break out, we talk and talk and talk. Chapter 11. The long and short of it is, gentlemen, that it is better to do nothing. Better conscious inertia. And so hurrah for the underground. Though I have said that I envy the normal man to the last drop of my bile, yet I should not care to be in his place as he is now, though I shall not cease envying him. No, no. Anyway, the underground life is more advantageous. There, at any rate, one can... Oh, but even now I am lying. I am lying because I know myself that it is not underground that is better, but something different, quite different, for which I am thirsting, but which I cannot find. Damn, underground. I will tell you another thing that would be better, and that is, if I myself believed in anything of what I have just written. I swear to you, gentlemen, there is not one thing, not one word of what I have written that I really believe. That is, I believe it, perhaps, but at the same time I feel and suspect that I am lying like a cobbler. Then why have you written all this, you will say to me? I ought to put you underground for 40 years without anything to do, and then come into your cellar to find out what stage you have reached. How can a man be left with nothing to do for 40 years? Isn't that shameful? Isn't that humiliating? You will say, perhaps wagging your heads contemptuously. You thirst for life and try to settle the problems of life by a logical tangle. And how persistent, how insolent your sallies. And at the same time, what a scare you are in. You talk nonsense and are pleased with it. You say impudent things and are in continual alarm and apologizing for them. You declare that you are afraid of nothing, and at the same time try to ingratiate yourself with our good opinion. You declare that you are gnashing your teeth, and at the same time you try to be witty so as to amuse us. You know that your witticisms are not witty, but you are evidently well satisfied with their literary value. You may perhaps have really suffered, but you have no respect for your own suffering. You may have sincerity, but you have no modesty. Out of the pettiest vanity, you expose your sincerity to publicity and ignominy. You doubtlessly mean to say something, but hide your last word through fear because you have not the resolution to utter it. And only have cowardly impudence. You boast of consciousness, but you are not sure of your ground. For though your mind works, yet your heart is darkened and corrupt, and you cannot have a full, genuine consciousness without a pure heart. And how intrusive you are, how you insist and grimace. Lies, lies, lies. Of course, I have made up all the things you say. That, too, is from underground. I have been for 40 years listening to you through a crack under the floor. I have invented them myself. There was nothing else I could invent. It is no wonder that I have learned it by heart, and it has taken a literary form. But can you really be so credulous as to think that I will print all this and give it to you to read, too? Another problem. Why do I call you gentlemen? And why do I address you as though you really were my readers? Such confessions as I intend to make are never printed nor given to other people to read. Anyway, I am not strong-minded enough for that, and I don't see why I should be. But you see, a fancy has occurred to me, and I want to realize it at all costs. Let me explain. Every man has reminiscences which he would not tell to everyone, but only to his friend. He has other matters in his mind which he would reveal not even to his friends, but only to himself, and that in secret. But there are other things which a man is afraid to tell even to himself, and every decent man has a number of such things stored away in his mind. The more decent he is, the greater the number of such things in his mind. Anyway, I have only lately determined to remember some of my early adventures. Till now I have always avoided them, even with a certain uneasiness. Now, when I am not only recalling them, but have actually decided to write an account of them, I want to try the experiment whether one can, even with oneself, be perfectly open and not take fright at the whole truth. I will observe in parenthesis that Heine says that a true autobiography is almost an impossibility, and that man is bound to lie about himself. He considers that Rousseau certainly told lies about himself in his confessions, and even intentionally lied out of vanity. I am convinced that Heine is right. I quite understand how sometimes one may, out of sheer vanity, attribute regular crimes to oneself, and indeed, I can very well conceive that kind of vanity. But Heine judged of people who made their confessions to the public. I write only for myself, and I wish to declare once and for all that if I write as though I were addressing readers, that is simply because it is easier for me to write in that form. It is a form, an empty form. I shall never have readers. I have made this plain already. I don't wish to be hampered by any restrictions in the compilation of my notes. I shall not attempt any system or method. I will jot things down as I remember them. But here, perhaps, someone will catch at the word and ask me, if you really don't reckon on readers, why do you make such compacts with yourself, and on paper too? That is, that you won't attempt any system or method, that you jot things down as you remember them, and so on and so on. Why are you explaining? Why do you apologize? Well, there it is, I answer. There is a whole psychology in all this, though. Perhaps it is simply that I am a coward, and perhaps that I purposely imagine an audience before me in order that I may be more dignified while I write. There are perhaps thousands of reasons. Again, what is my object precisely in writing? If it is not for the benefit of the public, why should I not simply recall these incidents in my own mind without putting them on paper? Quite so. But yet it is more imposing on paper. There is something more impressive in it. I shall be better able to criticize myself and improve my style. Besides, I shall perhaps obtain actual relief from writing. Today, for instance, I am particularly oppressed by one memory of a distant past. It came back vividly to my mind a few days ago and has remained haunting me like an annoying tune that one cannot get rid of. And yet, I must get rid of it somehow. I have hundreds of such reminiscences. But at times, someone stands out from the hundred and oppresses me. For some reason, I believe that if I write it down, I should get rid of it. Why not try?
Besides,
I'm bored, and I never have anything to do. Writing will be a sort of work. They say a work makes man kind-hearted and honest. Well, here is a chance for me, anyway. Snow is falling today, yellow and dingy. It fell yesterday, too, and a few days ago. I fancy it is the wet snow that has reminded me of that incident, which I cannot shake off now. And so, let it be a story apropos of the falling snow. End of chapter 11.